The administrators, the nurses, and the aides came then. They rolled Kemosabe over and drove their palms against his chest, but he didn't breathe again. No more high-o silver. They sighed over him and clucked their tongues, and finally an aide reached over and lifted Kemosabe's mask, pulling it off his head and dropped it on the floor, nonchalantly, and without respect, revealed his identity. It was no one anyone really knew. Once again, Elvis got scolded, and this time he got quizzed about what had happened to Kemosabe, and so did Jack, but neither told the truth. Who was going to believe a couple of nuts? Elvis and Jack Kennedy explaining that Kemosabe was gunning for a mummy in cowboy duds, a Bubba Hotep with a flock of shadows roiling about his cowboy-hatted head. So, what they did was lie.
Came snapping caps, and then he fell.
Jack corroborated his story, and when Kemosabe had been carried off, Elvis, with some difficulty, using his walker for support, got down on his knees and picked up the discarded mask and carried it away with him. He had wanted the guns, but an aide had taken those for her 4-year-old son. Later, he and Jack learned through the grapevine that Kemosabe's roommate, an 80-year-old man who had been in a semi-comatose condition for several years, had been found dead on the floor of his room. It was assumed Kemosabe had lost it and dragged him off his bed and onto the floor, and the 80-year-old man had kicked the bucket during the fall. As for Kemosabe, they figured he had gone nuts when he realized what he had done, and it wandered out into the hall, firing, and had a heart attack. Elvis knew different. The mummy had come, and Kemosabe had tried to protect his roommate in the only way he knew how. But instead of silver bullets, his gun smoked sulfur. Elvis felt a rush of pride in the old fart. He and Jack got together later, talked about what they had seen, and then there was nothing left to say. Night went away and the sun came up, and Elvis, who had slept not a wink, came up with it and put on khaki pants and a khaki shirt and used his walker to go outside. It had been ages since he had been out, and it seemed strange out there. All the sunlight and the smells of flowers and the Texas sky so high and the clouds so white. It was hard to believe he had spent so much time in his bed. Just the use of his legs with the walker these last few days had tightened the muscles, and he could get around better. The pretty nurse with the grapefruit tits came up to him.
Mr. Presley, you look so much stronger. But you shouldn't stay out too long. It's almost time for a nap and for us to, you know.
Fuck off, you patronizing bitch. I'm tired of your shit. I'll lose my own transmission. You treat me like a baby again, I'll wrap this goddamn walker around your head.
The pretty nurse looked stunned, then went away quietly. Elvis inched his way with the walker around the great circular drive that surrounded the home. It was half an hour when he reached the back of the home and the doors through which the mummy had departed. It was still locked. And he stood and looked at it in amazement. How in the hell had the mummy done that? Slipping through an indiscernible chink between door and frame. Elvis looked down at the concrete that lay at the back of the door. No clues there. He used the walker to travel toward the growth of trees out back. A growth of pin oaks and sweet gums and hickory nut trees that shouldered on either side of the large creek that flowed behind the home. The ground tipped sharply there, and for a moment he hesitated, then reconsidered.
Well, what the fuck?
He planted the walker and started going forward, the ground sloping ever more dramatically. By the time he reached the bank of the creek and came to a gap in the trees, he was exhausted. He had the urge to start yelling for help, but didn't want to belittle himself, not after his performance with the nurse. He knew that he had regained some of his former confidence. His cursing and abuse had not seemed cute to her that time. The words had bitten her, if only slightly. Truth was, he was going to miss her greasing his pecker. He looked over the bank of the creek. It was quite a drop there. The creek itself was narrow, and on either side of it was a gravel-littered 6 feet of shore. To his left, where the creek ran beneath a bridge, he could see where a mass of weeds and mud had gathered over time, and he could see something shiny in their midst. Elvis eased to the ground inside his walker and sat there and looked at the water churning along. A huge woodpecker laughed in a nearby tree, and a jay yelled at a smaller bird to leave his territory.
Where's old Bubba Ho-Tep gone? Where'd he come from? How in the hell did he get here?
He recalled what he had seen inside the mummy's mind. The silver bus, the rain, the shattered bridge, the wash of water and mud.
Well, now, wait a damn minute.
Here was water and mud and a bridge, though it wasn't broken, and something shiny in the midst of all those leaves and limbs and collected debris. All those items were elements of what he had seen in Bubba Ho-Tep's head. Obviously, there was a connection. But what was it? When he got his strength back, Elvis pulled himself up and got the walker turned and worked his way back to the home. He was covered in sweat and stiff as a wire by the time he reached his room and tucked himself into bed.
Ooh.
The blister on his dick throbbed, and he unfastened his pants and eased down his underwear. The blister had refilled with pus, and it looked nastier than usual.
It's a cancer. They're keeping it from me because I'm old, and to them it doesn't matter. They think age will kill me first. I'm probably right. Well, fuck them. I know what it is, and if it isn't, might as well be.
He got the salve and doctored the pus-filled lesion, and put the salve away, and pulled up his underwear and pants, and fastened his belt. Elvis got his TV remote off the dresser and clicked it on while he waited for lunch. As he ran the channels,
it's Elvis Week on Wayback TV.
It startled him. It wasn't the first time it had happened, but at the moment it struck him hard. It showed clips from his movies, Clambake, Roustabout, several others, all shit movies. Here he was complaining about loss of pride and how life had treated him. And now he realized he'd never had any pride, and much of how life had treated him had been quite good, and the bulk of the bad had been his own fault. He wished now he'd fired his manager, Colonel Parker, about the time he got into films. The old fart had been a fool, and he had been a bigger fool for following him. He wished, too, he had treated Priscilla right. He wished he could tell his daughter he loved her. Always the questions, never the answers. Always the hopes, never the fulfillments. Elvis clicked off the set and dropped the remote on the dresser just as Jack came into the room. He had a folder under his arm. He looked like he was ready for a briefing at the White House.
I had the woman who calls herself my niece come get me. She took me downtown to the newspaper morgue. She's been helping me do some research.
On what?
On our mummy.
You know something about him?
I know plenty.
Jack pulled a chair up next to the bed, and Elvis used the bed's lift button to raise his back and head so he could see what was in Jack's folder. Jack took out some clippings and laid them on the bed. Elvis looked at them as Jack talked.
One of the lesser mummies on loan from the Egyptian government was being circulated across the United States. You know, museums, that kind of stuff. It wasn't a major exhibit, like the King Tut exhibit some years back, but it was of interest. The mummy was flown or carried by train from state to state. When it got to Texas, it was stolen. Evidence points to the fact that it was stolen at night by a couple of guys in a silver bus. There was a witness, some guy walking his dog or something. Anyway, The thieves broke into the museum and stole it, hoping to get a ransom, probably. But in came the worst storm in East Texas history. Tornadoes, rain, hail, you name it. Creeks and the rivers overflowed. Mobile homes were washed away. Livestock drowned. Maybe you remember it? No matter. It was one hell of a flood. These guys got away, and nothing was ever heard from them. After you told me what you saw inside the mummy's head, the silver bus, the storm, the bridge, all that, I came up with a more interesting and, I believe, considerably more accurate scenario.
Let me guess. The bus got washed away. I think I saw it today. Right out back in the creek. Must have washed up there years ago.
That confirms it. The bridge you saw breaking? That's how the bus got in the water, which would have been as deep then as a raging river. The bus was carried downstream and lodged somewhere nearby, and the mummy was imprisoned by debris. And recently, it worked its way loose.
How did it come alive? And how did I end up inside its memories?
The speculation is broader here, but from what I've read, sometimes mummies were buried without their names. A curse put on their sarcophagus or coffin, if you will. And my guess is our guy was one of those. While he was in the coffin, he was a drying corpse. But when the bus was washed off the road, the coffin was overturned or broken open, and our boy was freed of coffin and curse. Or more likely, it rotted open in time, and the holding spell was broken. And think about him down there all that time, waiting for freedom, alive, but not alive, hungry and no way to feed. I said he was free of his curse, but that's not entirely true. He's free of his imprisonment, but he still needs souls. And now he's free to have them. And he'll keep feeding unless he's finally destroyed. You know, I think there's a part of him, oddly enough, that wants to fit in and to be human again. He doesn't entirely know what he's become. He responds to some old desires and the new desires of his condition. That's why he's taken on the illusion of clothes, probably copying the dress of one of his victims. The souls give him strength, increase his spectral powers, one of which was to hypnotize you, kind of draw you inside his head. He couldn't steal your soul that way. You'd have to be unconscious to have that done to you. But he could weaken you, distract you.
And those shadows around him?
His guardians. They warn him. They have some limited powers of their own. I've read about them in the Everyday Man or Woman's Book of the Soul.
What do we do?
I think changing rest homes would be a good idea. I can't think of much else. I will say this. Our mummy is a nighttime kind of guy, 3 a.m. actually. So I'm going to sleep now, and again after lunch. Set my alarm for before dark so I can fix myself a couple of cups of coffee. He comes tonight, I don't want him slapping his lips over my asshole again. I think he heard you coming down the hall about the time he started on me that other night, and he ran. Not because he was scared, but because he didn't want anyone to find out he's around. Consider it. He has the proverbial bird's nest on the ground here.
After Jack left, Elvis decided he should follow Jack's lead and nap. Of course, at his age, he napped a lot anyway, and could fall asleep at any time or toss restlessly for hours. There was no rhyme or reason to it. He nestled his head into his pillow and tried to sleep, but sleep wouldn't come. Instead, he thought about things, like what did he really have left in life but this place? It wasn't much of a home, but it was all he had. And he'd be damned if he'd let a foreign, graffiti-writing, soul-sucking son of a bitch in an oversized hat and cowboy boots with elf toes, take away his family members' souls and shit them down the visitor's toilet. In the movies, he had always played heroic types. But when the stage lights went out, it was time for drugs and stupidity and the coveting of women. Now it was time to be a little of what he had always fantasized being, a hero. Elvis leaned over and got hold of his telephone and dialed Jack's room.
Hello?
Mr. Kennedy, ask now what your rest home can do for you. Ask what you can do for your rest home.
Hey, you're copying my best lines.
Well then, to paraphrase one of my own, let's take care of business.
What are you getting at?
You know what I'm getting at. We're gonna kill a mummy.
The sun, like a boil on the bright blue ass of day, rolled gradually forward and spread its legs wide to reveal the pubic thatch of night, a hairy darkness in which stars crawled like lice, and the moon crept slowly upward like an albino dog tick thriving for the anal gulch. During this slow-rolled transition, Elvis and Jack discussed their plans, and they slept a little, ate their lunch of boiled cabbage and meatloaf, slept some more, ate a supper of white bread and asparagus, and a helping of shit on a shingle without the shingle, slept again, awoke about the time the pubic thatch appeared and those starry lice began to crawl. And even then, with night about them, they had to wait until midnight to do what they had to do. Jack squinted through his glasses and examined his list.
2 bottles of rubbing alcohol.
Check. And we won't have to toss it. Look here.
Elvis held up a paint sprayer.
I found this in the storage room.
I thought they kept it locked.
They do, but I stole a hairpin from Dillinger and picked the lock.
Great. Matches?
Check. Also scrounged up a cigarette lighter.
Good. Uniforms.
Elvis held up his white suit, slightly grayed in spots, with a chili stain on the front. A white silk scarf and the big gold and silver ruby-studded belt that went with the outfit lay on the bed. There were zippered boots from Kmart.
Check.
Jack held up a gray business suit on a hanger.
I got some nice shoes and a tie to go with it in my room.
Check.
Scissors.
Check.
I've got my motorized wheelchair oiled and ready to roll. And I've looked up a few words of power in one of my magic books. I don't know if they'll stop a mummy, but they're supposed to ward off evil. I wrote them down on a piece of paper.
We use what we got. Well then, 2:45 out back of the place.
Considering our rate of travel, better start moving around 2:30.
Jack, do we know what we're doing?
Nope. But they say all fire cleanses evil. Let's hope they, whoever they are, is right.
Check on that too. Synchronized watches.
They did.
Remember, the key words for tonight are caution and flammable. And watch your ass.
The front door had an alarm system, but it was easily manipulated from the inside. Once Elvis had cut the wires with the scissors, they pushed the compression lever on the door, and Jack shoved his wheelchair outside and held the door while Elvis worked his walker through. Elvis tossed the scissors into the shrubbery, and Jack jammed a paperback book between the doors to allow them re-entry. Should re-entry be an option at a later date? Elvis was wearing a large pair of sunglasses with multicolored gem-studded chocolate frames and his stained white jumpsuit with scarf and belt and zippered boots. The suit was open at the front and hung loose on him, except at the belly. To make it even tighter there, Elvis had made up a medicine bag of sorts and stuffed it inside his jumpsuit. The bag contained Kemosabe's mask, Bull's purple heart, and the newspaper clipping where he had first read of his alleged death. Jack had on his gray business suit with a black and red striped tie knotted carefully at the throat, sensible black shoes, and black nylon socks. The suit fit him well. He looked like a former president. In the seat of the wheelchair was the paint sprayer, filled with rubbing alcohol, and beside it, a cigarette lighter and a paper folder of matches. Jack handed Elvis the paint sprayer. A strap made of a strip of torn sheet had been added to the device. Elvis hung the sprayer over his shoulder and reached inside his belt and got out a flattened half-smoked stogie he had been saving for a special occasion. An occasion he had begun to think would never arrive. He clenched the cigar between his teeth, picked the matches from the seat of the wheelchair, and lit his cigar. It tasted like a dog turd, but he puffed it anyway.
Let's do it, amigo.
Jack put the matches and the lighter in his suit pocket. He sat down in the wheelchair, kicked the foot stanchions into place, and rested his feet on them. He leaned back slightly and flicked a switch on the armrest.
Meet you there.
He rolled down the concrete ramp, out onto the circular drive, and disappeared around the edge of the building. Elvis looked at his watch. It was nearly 2:45. He had to hump it. He clenched both hands on the walker and started trucking. Fifteen exhausting minutes later, out back, Elvis settled in against the door. The place where Bubba Hotep had been entering and exiting. The shadows fell over him like an umbrella. He propped the paint gun across the walker and used the scarf to wipe the sweat off his forehead. In the old days, after a performance, he'd wipe his face with it and toss it to some woman in the crowd. Watch as she creamed on herself. Panties and hotel keys would fly onto the stage at that point. Bouquets of roses. Tonight, he hoped Bubba Hotep didn't use the scarf to wipe his ass after shitting him down the crapper. Elvis looked where the circular concrete drive came up slightly to the right. And there, seated in the wheelchair, very patient and still, was Jack. The moonlight spread over Jack and made him look like a concrete yard gnome. Apprehension spread over Elvis like a dose of the measles.
Bubba Hotep comes out of that creek bed, he's gonna come out hungry and pissed. When I try to stop him, he's gonna jam this paint gun up my ass and then jam me in that wheelchair up Jack's ass.
He puffed his cigar so fast it made him dizzy. He looked out at the creek bank and where the trees gaped wide. A figure rose up like a cloud of termites, scrabbled like a crab, flowed like water, chunked and chinked like a mass of oil field tools tumbling downhill. Its eyeless sockets trapped the moonlight and held it momentarily before permitting it to pass through and out the back of its head in irregular gold beams. The figure, that simultaneously gave the impression of shambling and gliding, appeared one moment as nothing more than a shadow surrounded by more active shadows. Then it was a heap of twisted brown sticks and dried mud molded into the shape of a human being. And in another moment, it was a cowboy-hatted, booted thing taking each step as if it were its last. Halfway to the rest home, it spotted Elvis, standing in the dark framework of the door. Elvis felt his bowels go loose, but he determined not to shit his only good stage suit. His knees clacked together like stalks of ribbon cane rattling in a high wind. The dog-turd cigar fell from his lips. He picked up the paint gun and made sure it was ready to spray. He pushed the butt of it into his hip and waited. Bubba Hotep didn't move. He had ceased to come forward. Elvis began to sweat more than before. His face and chest and balls were soaked. If Bubba Hotep didn't come forward, their plan was fucked. They had to get him in range of the paint sprayer. The idea was he'd soak him with the alcohol, and Jack would come wheeling down from behind, flipping matches or the lighter at Bubba, catching him on fire.
Come on and get it, you dead piece of shit.
Jack had nodded off for a moment. But now he was awake. His flesh was tingling. It felt as if tiny ball bearings were being rolled beneath his skin. He looked up and saw Baba Hotep pause between the bank creek and himself, and Elvis at the door. This was not the way they had planned it. The mummy was supposed to go for Elvis because he was blocking the door. But no soap. Jack got the matches and the cigarette lighter out of his coat pocket and put them between his legs on the seat of the chair. He put his hand on the gearbox of the wheelchair and gunned it forward. He had to make things happen, had to get Baba Hotep to follow him, come within range of Elvis's spray gun. Baba Hotep stuck out his arm and clotheslined Jack Kennedy. The sound was like a rifle crack. No question, Warren Commission. This blow was from the front. And over went the chair, and out went Jack, flipping and sliding across the driveway, the cement tearing his suit knees open, gnawing into his hide. The chair, minus its rider, tumbled over and came upright, and still rolling, veered downhill toward Elvis in the doorway, leaning on his walker, spray gun in hand. The wheelchair hit Elvis's walker. Elvis bounced against the door, popped forward, grabbed the walker just in time, and dropped his spray gun. He glanced up to see Baba Hotep leaning over the unconscious Jack. Baba Hotep's mouth went wide, and wider yet, and became a black, toothless vacuum that throbbed pink as a raw wound in the moonlight. Then Baba Hotep turned his head, and the pink was not visible. Baba Hotep's mouth went down over Jack's face, and as Baba Hotep sucked, the shadows about it thrashed and gobbled like turkeys. Elvis used the walker to allow him to bend down and get hold of the paint gun. When he came up with it, he tossed the walker aside, eased himself around and into the wheelchair. He found the matches and lighter there. Jack had done what he had done to distract Baba Hotep, to try and bring him down closer to the door. But he had failed. Yet, by accident, he had provided Elvis with the instruments of the mummy's destruction. And now it was up to him to do what he and Jack had hoped to do together. Elvis put the matches inside his open-chested outfit, pushed the lighter tight under his ass. Elvis let his hand play over the wheelchair switches, as nimbly as he had once played with studio keyboards. He roared the wheelchair up the incline toward Baba Hotep. Terrified but determined, and within instants, he was on top of Baba Hotep and his busy shadows. Baba Hotep looked up as Elvis roared into range. Baba Hotep's open mouth, iris to normal size, and teeth, formerly non-existent, rose up in his gums like little black stumps. Electric locusts crackled and hopped in his empty sockets. He yelled something in Egyptian. Elvis saw the words jump out of Baba Hotep's mouth, invisible hieroglyphics, like dark beetles and sticks.
By the unwinking eye of Ra!
Elvis bore down on Baba Hotep. When he was in range, he gave the paint sprayer trigger a squeeze. Rubbing alcohol squirted from the sprayer and struck Baba Hotep in the face. Elvis swerved, screeched around Baba Hotep in a sweeping circle, came back, the lighter in his hand. As he neared Baba, the shadows swarming around the mummy's head separated and flew high up above him like startled bats. The black hat Baba wore wobbled and sprouted wings and flapped away from his head, becoming what it had always been, a living shadow. The shadows came down in a rush. They swarmed over Elvis's face, giving him the sensation of skinned animal pelts, blood side in, being dragged over his flesh. Baba bent forward at the waist like a collapsed puppet, bopped his head against the cement drive. His black bat hat came down out of the dark in a swoop, expanding rapidly and falling over Baba's body, splattering it like spilled ink. Bubba's blob flowed rapidly under the wheels of Elvis's mount and rose up in a dark swell beneath the chair and through the spokes of the wheels and billowed over the front of the chair and loomed upwards, jabbing his ravaged, ever-changing face through the filtering shadows, poking it right at Elvis. Elvis, through gaps in the shadows, saw a face like an old jack-o'-lantern's, gone black and a rot, with jagged eyes, nose, and mouth. And that mouth spread tunnel-wide, and down that tunnel mouth, Elvis could see the dark and awful forever that was Bubba's lot. And Elvis clicked the lighter to flame, and the flame jumped, and the alcohol lit Bubba's face, and Bubba's head turned baby eye blue, flowed jet quick away, splashed upward like a black wave carrying a blazing oil slick. Then Bubba came down in a shuffle of blazing sticks and dark mud, a tar baby on fire, fleeing across the concrete drive toward the creek. The guardian shadows flapped after it, fearful of being abandoned. Elvis wheeled over to Jack and leaned forward.
Mr. Kennedy.
Jack's eyes fluttered. He could barely move his head, and something grated in his neck when he did.
The president is soon dead.
His clenched fist throbbed and opened, and out fell a wad of paper.
You got to get him.
Jack's body went loose, and his head rolled back on his damaged neck, and the moon showed double in his eyes. Elvis swallowed and saluted Jack.
Mr. President.
Well, at least you kept Bubba Hotep from taking Jack's soul. Elvis leaned forward, picked up the paper Jack had dropped. He read it aloud to himself in the moonlight.
You nasty thing from beyond the dead. No matter what you think and do, good things will never come to you. If evil is your black design, you can bet the goodness of the light ones will kick your bad behind. That's it? That's a chant against evil from the Book of Souls? Yeah, right, boss. And what kind of decoder ring does that come with? Shit, it doesn't even rhyme well.
Elvis looked up. Bubba Hotep had fallen down in a blue blaze, but he was rising up again, preparing to go over the lip of the creek, down to wherever his sanctuary was. Elvis pulled around Jack and gave the wheelchair full throttle. His white scarf fluttered in the wind as he thundered forward. Bubba Hotep's flames had gone out. He was on his feet. His head was hissing gray smoke into the crisp night air. He turned completely to face Elvis, stood defiant, raised an arm and shook a fist. He yelled, and once again Elvis saw the hieroglyphs leap out of his mouth. The characters danced in a row briefly and vanished.
Eat the dog dick of Anubis, you asswipe.
Elvis let go of the protective paper. It was dog shit. What was needed here was action. Elvis stuck out a foot and hit Bubba Hotep in the back. And his foot went right through Bubba. The mummy squirmed, spitted on Elvis's leg. Elvis fired the paint sprayer as Bubba Hotep himself in the chair went over the creek bank in a flash of moonlight and a tumble of shadows. The hard ground and sharp stones snapped Elvis's body like a piñata. He made the trip with Bubba Hotep still on his leg, and when he quit sliding, he ended up close to the creek. Bubba Hotep, as if made of rubber, twisted around on Elvis's leg and looked at him. Elvis still had the paint sprayer. He had clung to it like it was a life preserver. He gave Bubba another dose. Bubba's right arm flopped way out and ran along the ground and found a hunk of wood that it washed up on the edge of the creek, gripped it, and swung the long arm back. The arm came around and hit Elvis on the side of the head with the wood. Elvis fell backwards. The paint sprayer flew from his hands. Bubba Hotep was leaning over him. He hit Elvis again with the wood. Elvis felt himself going out. He knew if he did, not only was he a dead son of a bitch, but so was his soul. He would be just so much crap. No afterlife for him. No reincarnation. No angels with harps. Whatever lay beyond would not be known to him. It would all end right here for Elvis Presley. Nothing left but a quick flush. Bubba Hotep's mouth loomed over Elvis's face. It looked like an open manhole. Sewage fumes came out of it. Elvis reached inside his open jumpsuit and got hold of the folder of matches. Laying back, pretending to nod out so as to bring Bubba Hotep's right mouth closer, he thumbed back the flap of the matches, thumbed down one of the paper sticks, and pushed the sulfurous head of the match across the black strip. Just as Elvis felt the cloying mouth of Bubba Hotep falling down on his kisser like a Venus flytrap, the entire folder of matches ignited in Elvis's hand and burned him. The alcohol on Bubba's body called the flames to it, and Bubba burst into a stalk of blue flame, singeing the hair off Elvis's head, scorching his eyebrows down to the nubs, blinding him until he could see nothing more than a scalding white light. Elvis realized that Bubba Hotep was no longer on or over him, and the white light became a stained white light, then a gray light, and eventually, the world, like a Polaroid negative developing, came into view. Greenish at first, then full of the night's colors. Elvis rolled on his side and saw the moon floating in the water. He saw, too, a scarecrow floating in the water, the straw separating from it, the current carrying it away. No, not a scarecrow. Bubba Hotep. For all his dark magic and ability to shift, or to appear to shift, fire had done him in. Or had it been the stupid words from Jack's book on souls? Or both? It didn't matter. Elvis got up on one elbow and looked at the corpse. The water was dissolving it more rapidly, and the current was carrying it away. Elvis fell over on his back. He felt something inside him grate against something soft. He felt like a water balloon with a hole poked in it. He was going down for the last count, and he knew it.
But I still got my soul. Still mine. All mine. And the folks in Shady Rest, Dillinger, the Blue Yodeler, all of them, they're theirs. And they'll keep them.
Elvis stared up at the stars between the forked and twisted boughs of an oak. He could see a lot of those beautiful stars, and he realized now that the constellations looked a little like the outlines of great hieroglyphics. He turned away from where he was looking, and to his right, seeming to sit on the edge of the bank, were more stars, more hieroglyphics. He rolled his head back to the figures above him, rolled to the right, and looked at those, put them together in his mind. Suddenly, he thought he could read hieroglyphics after all. And what they spelled out against the dark, beautiful night was simple, and yet profound.
All is well.
Elvis closed his eyes and did not open them again. Bubba Hotep by Joe R. Lansdale is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1994 by Joe R. Lansdale. Published by arrangement with the author. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2025 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Scott McCormick. Featuring Mort Shelby as Elvis Aaron Presley and Kenyatta Rogers as Jack. With additional performances by Rose Elizabeth Supan, Jenna Sharp, Kaya Freitz, Eric Messner, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, and Nanette Savard. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Scott McCormick. Dialogue, editing, and graphic audio sound design by Maddie Famartino. Theme music by Maddie Frank. Additional original music by Maddie Frank. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Elvis will return in Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers by Joe R. Lansdale. Before Bubba Hotep, there was Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers, part of a secret government organization designed to protect civilians. Elvis Presley and a handful of hardcore warriors set out to save the world from an invasion of hive-minded, shape-shifting vampire-like creatures from a dark dimension who have taken up residence in a New Orleans junkyard. Bring the kids, but plug their ears and blindfold them. This is one wild, nasty ride to the dark side, but with laughter. If you want more horror-filled full-cast audio comedy, keep listening for a sample of Hellboy and the BPRD, Goddess of Manhattan, by Christopher Golden and Thomas E. Snigoski. Available now in groovy graphic audio. Excuse me, can we get a look?
Let him through. Hellboy, you make heads or tails out of this?
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, not good.
You recognize the writing?
Looks vaguely familiar. Not Sumerian, but, similar. If the professor was still with us, he'd definitely harumph in disapproval. I always got the lost languages jumbled in my head.
You have other skills.
Hey, detective. I've got a gate over here with the chain broken, and it looks like there are stairs heading down.
Hang back a minute. Whatever did this to Sarette, it's strong and vicious, and it worked fast. I'll go first.
Well, when you put it that way, be my guest. And take this flashlight. It's more powerful.
Thanks. Liz, have a look.
Any idea where those stairs go?
Ramirez, do we have a blueprint or a schematic or whatever for this area?
Not yet, Detective. We got someone from the MTA digging it up. But even if we get it, there's so many old tunnels down here, buried waterways, 19th century secret passages. There are definitely layers no map is gonna show.
We can't waste time waiting around.
I'm heading down.
What do you see?
Give him a minute.
There's a whole other chamber down here. Almost like a bomb shelter or something. But I don't think they built that kind of thing in Manhattan.
We're coming down.
Yeah. There's a passage branching off the room, but this part's all clear. Watch your step.
Anybody who remembers what some of these tunnels were for are probably long dead now.
Oof, the smell down here. God, what is that?
Check it out. There's a big pile of garbage in the corner there. Looks like somebody's been scavenging stuff from the stations and just... Oh, yeah, ooh, the stench is a killer. Oh.
More than one pile. And bedrolls. A makeshift toilet on the edge there where there's a crevice in the rock. Oh, looks deep.
Son of a bitch. Ugh, that's disgusting.
Something has definitely been squatting down here. That garbage looks like a nest.
Ugh. Look on the wall above it. Get some light up there.
More of those symbols.
Are those bones?
Yeah, and by the looks of them, human. They've been gnawed on pretty good, too.
My God. Maybe this isn't just some nut in a fur coat.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind. on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.